Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast with myself, your host, Ryan Abraham, and Gerard Martinez, USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst. We love to come on the show. We haven't done one for a few weeks, but come and talk about the latest happenings of USC recruiting. We're in the middle of the May evaluation period, so we wanted to pick G-Mart's brain to see what was going on with USC. There's been some news, maybe some news upcoming, so this seemed like a good time to talk some Trojan recruiting with Gerard Martinez. So let's welcome him in. Gerard, welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Great to be here, as always. Definitely has been a little while. We've had a lot kind of going on with the site and upgrades and new content pages and the new message boards coming up here pretty soon. Doing a lot of sort of business work with the website and not really able to talk recruiting. Of course, we still got just a faucet of content just coming out every day. We're going to have to actually talk about that at some point. Trying to get to a point where we can get all the content in front of people. I think we put up so much content these days is that, you know, we can't have 20 stories pinned every day. We need to sort of have like, a place to get all this stuff and organize it. So we talked a lot about some stuff with the site and some platform changes in terms of how we get the content to people. So there's a lot of stuff coming up with USCFootball.com in the next few months, really. I think from now probably to mid next fall, we're going to have a lot of different things rolling out. And, we're going to try to get organized here. So, haven't been able to talk too much recruiting, but there is stuff to talk about.
There is. And like we just had a meeting in Nashville. So that's the home of 24/7 Sports. They used to call it the Publisher Conference. Now it was like the Staff and Partner Conference. And we learned a lot about what Gerard was talking about, a lot of the improvements last year in general. If you didn't see my post on the Peristyle, there was a lot of work with mergers. So merging in the whole Scout network with 24/7 Sports. That's pretty much all done now. So this is going to be a year of the user trying to enhance the user experience. So that's all of you out there trying to make sure that it's better. There was a little hiccup this morning when they rolled out the new article pages. It was actually working earlier this morning, and then things got a little quirky, and then it should be all fine now. But they're going to make a bunch of improvements this year. Gerard mentioned the message board. So we're really excited about all that, just trying to get a better product for all of you. We still, like we said, we create a lot of great content. Hopefully you think it's great. And we want the best platform possible to deliver it to all of you and all that recruiting news. And there's been some recruiting news, Gerard. So I don't know where you'd like to start, but wherever you'd like to go, let's jump in and start talking about the latest USC recruiting news.
Well, USC got a commitment yesterday, Wednesday, from linebacker. He's a three-star out of Grace Brethren, which is in Simi Valley, a smaller parochial school in Simi Valley, but a school that's had some good success here the past few years. They actually were 2A CIF. They weren't state champions, but they were Southern Section champions, and they lost to Mountain View St. Francis in the championship game last year. So they've had some success. And they put out some good players, and one of their top players, according to Josh Henderson, their head coach, is Stanley Tofu. And Stanley Tofu is 6'3", 245, and a beast on film. USC went up to go see him yesterday, and non-coincidentally, Johnny Nansen was on campus, and he decided to commit. So he becomes USC's number three commit in the 2019 class. And had an interesting conversation with Coach Henderson last night just about Stanley and sort of what he brings to the table. He's not a kid that we've seen much of this offseason. He hasn't gone to any Nike camps. He's not a guy that does interviews. He's very quiet, very humble kid. But his coach raved about him. I mean, just said that he was the best player he's ever seen there. Maybe the best player that has come out of that area in quite a long time. And talked about him and his versatility. He rated, on top of my head, I can't remember what he's actually rated by Scout as an inside linebacker, but he's rated as an inside linebacker. And I asked him just about, you know, why are you playing him at that particular position and maybe not other positions on the defense? And he said, you know, we do play him everywhere. We play him all over the field. You know, he's actually probably started more as an outside linebacker last year than he did inside. And so a great pass rusher, a guy that made some big time plays in the playoffs for them in the championship game. He had a really nice play where he got in the offensive backfield really quickly, and basically took the ball away from the quarterback like it was a handoff and ran it for a touchdown. So you're talking about a 6'3", 245 pound, typically a 4'6", 40 type guy. And when you look at him, he's benching 405 and he doesn't have a lot of bad weight on him. I mean, he's a kid that's really pretty lean for as big as he is. So you could see where, I mean, the sky is sort of the limit. They put him at nose tackle. They put him at 5 technique, 4-eye technique, which is the 4 inside technique. They put him at Mike linebacker. So in USC's defense, he could end up playing a bunch of different positions. I kind of get the sense perhaps maybe he plays the predator position. That's a potential for him. You know, like I said, he's rated as an inside linebacker. He sort of has that makeup of some of the inside linebackers USC has recruited. We talked a little bit in the analysis piece about USC and sort of, you know, their evolution of linebackers and how they've gone bigger, really since Clancy Pendergast first came to USC in 2013. That's when we saw the big change, because that's really where they went from, you know, that base 4-3 under defense that they were running with Pete Carroll, and they started to go more with a 3-4, 5-2, whatever you want to call it, that variant of a three-man down defensive front. So now they're actually running really as their base defense, a 2-4-5 defense, and running really just two interior defensive linemen. So obviously your linebackers have to be a little bigger because they're going to encounter more contact from offensive linemen, especially if you're playing on the line of scrimmage. So they've gotten a lot bigger, and a guy like Stanley Tofu is that kind of player. He's a big body. He's got some speed. He's very violent at the point of contact. He's a guy that has some big hits on his film. And obviously he's playing at Grace Brethren, a smaller school, but not a school that plays bad competition. They do play some solid teams up there. Their schedule is pretty good. And like I said, I mean, they end up playing St. Francis in the state championship game and only lost to St. Francis by a touchdown or so. It was a pretty close game and went into the fourth quarter. And St. Francis, that team was a team that really played De La Salle pretty hard up there in Northern California earlier in the season. So, you know, this is going to be a bit of a transition. He's coming from a smaller school, but I don't know if it's going to be quite the jump that people would think it is, especially physicality-wise. This is a kid that on film he shows very well.
Gerard, he's a three-star guy. That's terrible, right?
He's a three-star guy, but he's a guy that we just haven't seen a whole lot. I think the lead to my story was, you know, he's not necessarily a diamond in rough. Maybe he's a diamond in plain sight. He's just a kid that out there in Simi Valley, it's, you know, not an area where you've got college recruiters maybe hitting as hard as you would in the city section or even at the IE at this point. Grace Brethren is sort of a newer school. Like I said, they've got some solid players coming out of there, but it's not like, you know, Oaks Christian or Hawkins School where you had, you know, this new school with a ton of talent being interjected into it, and they were playing competition that was really a good three notches below where they were. And so Stanley's not necessarily playing on a team where there's just a whole bunch of studs around him and he's playing against bad competition. He's sort of one of those guys that's kind of carrying that team and playing against that competition, which, you know, he's not seeing a ton of offensive linemen. He's not seeing a ton of guys that he's going to go against on the offensive side of the ball that are Division I prospects. But I think that, you know, physicality-wise, he shows up well on film, and he's one of those things that, I think Johnny Nansen is a recruiter at this point. He's earned the credibility and the trust of the fan base. I think that that's very much so. I mean, especially when we just watch guys like Kanai Munga in spring ball and a total sort of diamond in the rough, a guy who goes out there to Hawaii to get, didn't have a bunch of scholarship offers. Really, it was sort of, and we're talking about USC and the evolution of the size of linebackers they're recruiting. He's a 6'2", 215-pound linebacker playing Sam. That really at USC right now is kind of undersized. I mean, he's actually a smaller guy. So, you know, Nansen decided to go out there and go get him, and he was really a very, I don't know if I would say bright spot, because it wasn't like he was the only one standing out in spring ball. But certainly among those freshmen, he was out there holding his own, and he looked like a really good player. He looked like a guy that was showing a lot of potential. And, you know, from that standpoint of we're talking about small schools and competition in high school, you know, Kanai Munga was a guy that wasn't playing against, you know, the best competition in high school either. And so he made that transition. He was able to come in during the spring, and he showed well. And so it's another one, like a Jordan ISF is another guy that, you know, Coach Nansen went out there and got that guy when a lot of other schools weren't really hardly recruiting him very much. And he's turned out to be a big contributor for USC. So again, when you've got those kind of coaches that have shown that they've got the eye for talent and they can evaluate, I think that people get excited regardless of what the star level is.
So I know there's been some other news, visits and things like that. I think Blair Angulo posted on the Peristyle. A bunch of kids from Hawaii are coming out to visit. What other kind of news has been going on around, before we jump into the questions, around USC recruiting?
Yeah, so Fatu Tuatelli is coming out to unofficially visit USC, I believe, tomorrow. Five-star defensive tackle from St. Louis, Honolulu. One of, if not the top target that USC is recruiting, certainly at the defensive line position, a guy that actually earned number one spot in our 10 of Troy. Just with the buzz around him, the fact that it's a defensive tackle spot, and you know defensive tackles don't necessarily grow on trees out west, at least guys that can impact immediately once they get on campus as freshmen, and a five-star. And he's local. You know, he's in Hawaii, which is obviously it's not L.A., but in terms of regionally, USC recruits Hawaii very well. Obviously, there's a pipeline that's gone on there for many years with Polynesian players. And he's one of those kids that sort of is in that line. Now, he's already a national recruit. So this is not, you know, Jordan Isefa or Kanai Munga, who you look at and go, okay, he's kind of tucked away there in Hawaii. Maybe a lot of people haven't seen him. Everybody's seen him already. He's taken unofficial visits to Oklahoma, Ohio State, Alabama, LSU. He's been around. He's seen a bunch of schools. A bunch of schools are recruiting him. But USC is still, I think, among the favorites to be able to land him. And this is going to be a very important unofficial visit because he hasn't been on campus this spring. He was actually supposed to be on campus the week that they had the opening regional in Los Angeles. But, you know, he'd been kind of saving his money and to make a trip with some of his teammates. And so this is the weekend that he does that. So kind of a big weekend for him and for USC and to make sure that they still are a presence in his recruitment. And he's going to probably end up committing, I would think, probably in August, September. I have a feeling he's going to be one of those guys. He may still take official visits after that point, so it may not be all said and done. But certainly, anytime you can get a kid on campus, it's a five-star, you want a good showing, and you want to be able to make some type of impression on his recruitment. So kind of big for USC. USC's given a lot of scholarship offers out in the past few days. One interesting scholarship offer that definitely popped up in the radar was that of Trey Davis from Federal Way High School up there in Washington. Interesting because USC is really his first big scholarship offer. He's got scholarship offers from Sacramento State and Portland State. There's several Pac-10 schools, Pac-12 schools that are recruiting him, but they haven't actually gone ahead and pulled the trigger on a scholarship offer. USC has, and from what I'm hearing, I mean, USC really, really likes him. 6 foot, 180, 185 pounds, runs well. He's running in the low 10.9, high 10.8 range right now in track. And so USC fans should keep an eye out for him because we think that with that scholarship offer and the relationship that he's kind of built up with the coaching staff here in the past few weeks, he may go ahead and jump on that offer and commit really soon. So that would be kind of an interesting move. I mean, you've got two players here in this week that would have committed that are really kind of off the radar guys, you know, not guys that had offers coming in the May evaluation, but guys that USC went on campus and watched and offered from those evaluations, in-person evaluations, and then took their commitment. So that's always an interesting thing. You know, when I watch that, it's you've got the kids that kind of get their offers from film and they get their offers early in their careers, and then you get the kids that get the offers a little later. And that's always intriguing just because you're watching the coaching staff. They're finding guys, and I think you want that. I think you don't want the coaching staff sitting back and just taking a bunch of commitments from guys that are highly touted or are supposed to be great players because they've got 50 offers, but aren't necessarily doing it on camps, or they're not earning those offers from actual evaluations. These are coming from evaluations. This is the USC coaching staff that's out there hitting the road and seeing these kids. And from those evaluations, that's where the offers and the commitments are coming from.
Well, would you like to jump into the questions next, Gerard?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it. Okay, so let's see. First up, we got a lot of good questions. Let's go to SC Made. He said, with the aftermath of the first early signing period and observing what other programs are doing, Oregon, Notre Dame, Texas, Ohio State, etc., with filling up their classes as fast as they can, and then this is in all caps, so this must be important. Do you think SC is making a mistake or playing it smart by not pushing hard for these commitments now/summertime? I always love their strategy in the past to push hard in January when it counts, but with every team in the country, including the powerhouse Blue Bloods, pushing hard earlier, do you think SC might need to adjust their strategy? Best SC Made.
No, I mean, I think you don't adjust your strategy until you feel like it's not working. And I think USC, again, with the January, sort of that stretch from November to January, really putting a lot of emphasis on that. Until, you know, there's a signing day that impacts, you know, who's committed earlier in the summer, and I mean a signing day like in August or September, I don't think any of it really matters. I think it's all just posturing, quite frankly. And I think that's true for a lot of schools. I think they're taking commits. And we've seen USC do that. I mean, it's not like USC didn't have, 10 commits or something like that last year and the year before. They had commits early on, but you just knew that was sort of the rough draft of the class. You knew there was going to be guys in the class that were committed early on, that if USC had a good year, they had momentum and they could go after better players, they were going to end up going after better players. And so this year's been different only in that they haven't taken a bunch of guys that they really don't necessarily want. But you know what? It's even one of those things that, again, it's still an outline of the class. And even though guys are committed now, they may still take visits and things may still happen where you take it all with a grain of salt. So it's one of those things. Do you take a bunch of commits? Do you pad your stats and take like six guys that are like, they're okay. They're solid players. But you know what? At the end of the day, January, we're probably going to try to maneuver and get away from that. I think why this question comes up is, everybody felt like, you know, a majority of the schools may have kind of got caught with their pants down a little bit with the last early signing period, and that early signing period being in December, but still impacting sort of those second tier and third tier players, because those were the guys that were signing also. And then when you come up in January and you realize, all right, we are going to lose maybe a couple more juniors to the NFL than we thought. We may have more transfers than we thought. Maybe some guys are going to retire medically. You have spots that open up, and all of a sudden those B and C plans that you normally have in January, guys that are committed to maybe Washington State or Utah or even Oregon State, some of those guys have already committed and they signed. The question is that going to happen again this year? And I think overall there's going to be a lot less guys that are going to sign in that early signing period from just talking to kids. And obviously I'm not talking to a lot of those plan Cs at this point. Those guys are plan Cs for a reason. So it's kind of hard to, you know, it's like USC's got some other guys ahead of them. And you kind of always look at, okay, what's going to be the plan A for them? That's what we want to know about. But those guys that maybe they haven't offered yet and they'll end up offering in like November, I don't think those guys are going to be able to commit, and I don't think they want to commit the way they did last year. And I think even with some of the top-tier guys that we've talked to, they've all pretty much not really understood why so many guys commit early last year. And I don't know if that's fallout from those players actually committing and maybe kind of regretting it, or it's just the coaches and the people that are around them that watched that process. They started to look at it and try to rationalize, okay, why did this guy commit and then sign when so many other potential letter of intents were coming his way just a month after that point? I think that's sort of what happened. I think it's more the high school coaches, the handlers. They started looking around. They started to realize, you know, if this kid would have just hung out a little longer and been a little more patient, he probably got three or four more opportunities, and there would have been better opportunities for him. And so I don't think you're going to have quite the numbers of kids that are going to go and sign on that early signing period. Now, I mean, that's just a projection. Again, you know, I think that this question stems from people, you know, you want to be prepared. You want to be ahead of the curve and everything. I just don't think USC feels that pressure right now that they need to be ahead of the game. And I don't know that a lot of these schools that are taking early commits, if they're really doing anything different than they have before. I mean, there's schools that have always taken, you know, a bunch of early commits. I think that it's just one of those things that perhaps they don't want to get caught with their pants down with December. But again, I don't get the sense that December this year, 2018, is going to be the same as it was in 2017. I think there's just not as many kids that are lined up ready to do it. And really, it's more, it's not that they're not ready to do it now. It's more they've talked against it and not wanting to do it and having an explanation and reason why. So it's not one of those things, well, they're just not sure. And then boom, all of a sudden we get into, you know, early December and everybody and their brother's saying, oh yeah, I'm going to commit and I'm going to go ahead and sign. That's really what happened. It was like the end of November, early December. And like every other day, a kid's getting on Twitter saying, I'm going to be signing my letter of intent. And then schools are scrambling because they hadn't gotten an official visit yet.
All right. I'm curious to see how that works, because I feel like if USC could have done it over again, they would try to sign more guys early. But it doesn't seem like you're leaning that way. So we'll see. We'll see what they end up doing.
Last year, they would have. Last year, if they knew what, you know, in hindsight, they would have definitely, I think, been more aggressive early. And look, it's not like they can't still be aggressive early. I mean, we're in May. It's really going to be the end of June where you start to take a look at, okay, how aggressive were they? How aggressive weren't they? Because you're going to have guys on campus. We're going to see some official visits coming here in the next couple of weeks for USC. And we're going to see some official visits also in June. So, you know, we're talking, okay, they only got three commits. I mean, they could still end up with eight commits by the time we get into August. So, you know, is that pushing early? Is that, you know, I mean, that's kind of normal really for USC is probably to have 5 to 8 early commitments. I don't think they're going to push really hard and kind of eliminate themselves from having options in January unless there's a year that comes by where they actually get burned by it. And they didn't get burned last year. I mean, there was one spot, and that was the offensive line spot where they kind of went all in with Penei Sewell, who ended up committing to Oregon. But that was really the only spot where they probably said, oh, you know, we wish we would have had some of these, you know, maybe second, third tier options just to get a, you know, a body, get somebody in there that we evaluated, that we offered, that we liked. Maybe he's not our first choice, but he's a guy that can come in and contribute for us at some point down the line. Other than that, it kind of worked out for them pretty well. I mean, there wasn't a bunch of guys there that they missed out on because of the early signing period. I mean, I think, you know, the whole thing with Julius Irvin, obviously that was a bit of a weird thing, and that's probably one guy that I could see maybe they would push for. But it ended up working out for them in the defensive backfield. I mean, they ended up getting Chase Williams, Isaac Taylor Stewart, Elijah Griffin, and Talanoa Hufanga. And that's pretty much a plan A by every account.
All right, let's move on to the next one. We got Paul in Vegas. He says, with the saying, and he quotes, you can never have too many great pass rushers, how do you evaluate this class for pass rushers? Is Kayvon pretty much a must-get in this regard? Is there anyone else you see us possibly getting to fill this role? Thanks, Paul in Vegas.
That's a good question, and it is a good class for pass rushers. It's certainly better than last year from a down lineman standpoint. Thibodeau is a hybrid, and he's a guy that would come in at the predator position. He's about 230, 235 right now. He wants to be about 250 in that 260 range eventually. Is he a must-get? You know, it's tough to say he is only because of the depth that USC has at the predator position. I think it's just sort of an exaggeration to say that he's a must-get. You know, and really, if you're going to categorize him as a must-get, you'd have to say Mace Funa is also a must-get. And Mace Funa is committed to Oregon, but Mace Funa is right up there in terms of that natural instinctive pass rush ability, his ability to get in the passing lane to make plays on the ball. We actually – categorized him as a Sam linebacker just because of his ball skills and his ability to play in space. But, you know, I must get at that position of the hybrid sort of pass rusher. I think that's tough to say. I think with USC, I mean, obviously we talked about Fatui Tuatelli and his unofficial visit to USC. That's a guy that being a five-star interior defensive lineman, those guys are hard to find. So would you label him as a must-get? I mean, it's a deeper year for defensive linemen, so I don't know if I would say he's a must-get. I think he's a guy that you really, really want and a guy that you can kind of build around. But, you know, is Drake Jackson a guy that, you know, you can't sort of offset if you lose a guy like Tuatelli, that you get maybe a Drake Jackson, maybe you get Matthew Polamau. You've got Stephen Wright there. You've got Saki Ika, who's another guy that USC's kind of pushed in on harder. He's a 6'3", 360-pound, more of a sort of Stevie Tuikolovatu, you know, a nose tackle type that's just a big plugger in the middle. It's a good year for defensive linemen. And so from an interior standpoint, I think you've got some good pass rushers and you've got some guys you really want. But because there's multiple guys, I think that it's hard to maybe label one guy must get. As good as Tuatelli is, I mean, is he a must get? I think USC is going to be able to get by even if they don't get him. You really, really want him, but you could get by if you don't get him. I think with Thibodeau, if there's an argument that he's a must get, and this is kind of what we said in the 10 of Troy, it's just because he's a local player. He's a guy that USC has been recruiting for a long time. It's more of a statement. We get a guy that is our guy. Originally a city guy, a guy that we've been recruiting for a long time. It's sort of more of the statement of who he is as much as, okay, how much is he actually contributing to the defense? How much do you need him when you've got all these other options? And you have guys on the roster already that are good players. I mean, we're talking about Stanley Tofu, who's a guy that is 6'3", 245, and could be a really good player in and of itself. And he could end up maybe playing that predator position. You know, it's just, it's hard to tell. So I the must-get thing for me personally, I understand from the fan standpoint, and again, it's a statement to get Kayvon Thibodeau. He's a must-get for the fans. You know, to every guy's the next guy is always the must-get, right? You know, you get, oh, we got to get Paliye Nyoteote. We got to get him. He's a must-get. Okay, he got him. Now Solo's the must-get. And there's always the next guy is the must-get, right? But, I mean, in reality of who you got on the roster and what other options you have, I don't know if there's just a must-get because there's several options that are really good.
Man, he's a must-get to me, but all right. I mean, he's one of those studs. He was like Rasheem Green back in the day. Like, he's a guy local you just really want to get because there's not a lot of guys like him. But I get what he was saying there. All right, let's go to Bearsecutor, Gerard. He said, Gerard, with Jason Rodriguez, the first shoe to drop, what are USC's chances with the following targets individually and as a group, i.e., what are the odds we could land or should land all five in the 2019 class if we ball out this year? These guys all seem good enough to play at USC, and I have to believe there's room for five offensive linemen in this class, given only two were recruited last year. So Rodriguez is committed. And then it's, do you know how to pronounce this one? T-A-U-A-N-U-U.
Taunu'u. That's our boy Jonah Taunu'u.
Okay. And then Vimahi.
Vimahi? Yeah, Enoch Ivani. Okay, so let's start with Jonah. We'll go through these, you know, individually, okay, so we can, you know, talk about, we don't, you know, have to remember who the heck they're talking about. With Jonah, I think USC's in a great position. Oregon made a little bit of a move because they invited him up there for their big spring game. Had a bunch of recruits up there, a bunch of guys committed. They threw everything in the kitchen sink at him to sort of second-guess USC. But he didn't commit, and I think it's just tough to get him away from USC. I think his family wants him local. I think he's part of that core group of guys. And if USC's winning and there's momentum there and they get to another Pac-12 championship, I just don't think there's any way that Jonah Taunu'u is now you got me talking like you. He's going to go away to Oregon or any other school, Washington or anything like that. I think that that's a guy that gets locked up for USC if USC is playing well. For Inok Vamahi, a little different. He's a Hawaiian guy, grew up a USC fan, really likes USC, but you know he hasn't been on campus yet. And I think, you know, that's there's always sort of that open-ended thing with, you know, okay, if he's actually got to get on campus and he's got to go through the motions. And I don't know if USC, how hard they're going to push on him. I think they like him. I mean, I think we got him rated at 24/7 as the number one offensive tackle in the region right now. But that's not necessarily USC's opinion. So it really becomes one of those questions of, okay, are you going for five or are you going for four? And I think that's the guy that I kind of wonder that would be maybe more of a, if you get out the commits from other guys, is he still a take? But certainly there's potential there. Utah's involved with him. Washington likes him. I mean, it's all the Pac-12 schools are on him and are chasing him. But I think USC is in a solid position. And again, you win, you have momentum. Everybody's singing your praises as a coaching staff. I think definitely a very good option for USC.
And then, okay, so the next one, Ryan. R-H-Y-A.
Sean Ryan from San Juan Hills and San Juan Capistrano, the number one rated offensive tackle, I think, in California, whereas Inok is number one in the region. Sean Ryan is number one in California. And a guy that's really kind of been off the radar a bit. He doesn't go to camps. He doesn't talk a whole lot. He's been kind of low-key a little bit about the recruiting process. So in that, he's a little bit of a wild card because it's hard to read a guy that you just don't talk to very much. I think USC's in a solid position. They've been recruiting him for a long time. They've got some connections there to the school and some connections to people that are close to him. And I think that bodes well for them. It's an interesting thing, though. I mean, you're going to have Stanford involved with him as well. I think Stanford's pushing really the hardest. I think USC and Stanford are kind of one and two in terms of the schools that he likes the most and the schools that are recruiting him the hardest. We're going to kind of have to see how that plays out. But I think that's sort of where you have some potential for, you know, maybe missing out, and maybe, you know, that's where Inok Vamihe comes in, or vice versa, where there's some potential for some movement. One of those guys, I could see USC trying to get them both. And I mean, it's one of those years where I think you take five if you can get five out of that group. I think you take five if you can get five. But that's my opinion. I don't know. I mean, USC may come down to one of those things where, okay, can we get a second linebacker, a second running back in there? Do we need a second quarterback? Because as I said before, that quarterback position is a precarious one. If you have JT Daniels starting, and then you got the two guys on the roster right now, Matt Fink and Jack Sears, and they decide they want to leave, you know, all of a sudden you've got one scholarship quarterback on the roster. You can't just recruit one guy for 2019. You got to go out and recruit two guys. And maybe it'd be better to bring in a guy who's actually a grad transfer with a little more experience to play behind JT Daniels or compete with JT Daniels. But it's just going to be tough, you know. And so that's the thing. And everybody says, do you really think Matt Fink would transfer? I don't think so. But again, you have to be prepared. You have to be prepared as if it would happen, not sit there and go, I don't think it's going to happen. And then you get, you know, you end up in a bad position because it does happen. So, you know, that can always affect how many guys are taking it at one position. And so I think, you know, I would take five. I think it's a deep enough class to take five. But I think the question is going to be, is it Sean Ryan? If they can nail him and they can get him, then I think everything else sort of falls into place.
Do you want to talk about Amave Lau? Is that right? Or
Amave, yeah, Laulu.
Laulu.
That's
okay.
Malasea, the junior college offensive guard, really. I think he's ranked as an offensive tackle right now in the JUCO rankings, but he probably could play guard in the interior. He's like 365 at Navarro College right now, junior college, originally, I think, from Sacramento area. He's a guy that really heavy leaned to USC. Actually, a guy that, to be honest with you, I thought he was going to commit to USC a couple months ago. That's kind of what we were hearing. but he hasn't said anything public. We've talked to him since. He says he's going to wait. He's going to go through the process a little bit. And that's another guy that, again, a heavy lean to USC, would not be surprised if he popped at some point. You know, and again, you kind of have to look at the class as a whole and see, you know, that maybe, you know, he looks around and sees that they've got some other guys committed that could impact him. But I got the feeling that he's sort of eyeballing, you know, that Chuma Adoga spot, because that's going to be vacated. You know, we're going to have to see what happens with Austin Jackson. Hopefully Austin Jackson, for USC fans' sake, he ends up establishing himself as that franchise left tackle, and you don't have to worry so much about that. But you're going to lose Toa. You're going to lose some players of that offensive line that are good players that have had starting experience. And so that's what this offensive line class is going to look at, and that's what you have to sell. So, again, you know, you could bring in four guys. I think four is for sure. It's just a matter of, is there going to be a fifth guy in there? And I think, if you can get Sean Ryan committed, I think that's when you start to talk about a fifth guy. And I think that's when Enoch Vahami is really the guy that you kind of, that's where you teeter on, if you can bring him in as the fifth guy. And you'll be battling, you know, like I said, you're going to be battling some other Pac-12 schools to convince him to be a part of that, but USC can do it. I mean, they've got Johnny Nansen, the Polynesian Whisperer there.
Yeah, he is. Big Nick from the P, Nick from Cyprus, along the same lines, he wanted to know, how many offensive linemen can we nab this year? I know we got Jason Rodriguez in the fold. Can we get the kid from Narbonne and his cousin Kalepo, the UW commit, as a great OT haul? Fight on from Nick.
Yeah, I think Kalepo would be sort of sixth or seventh probably on that list. We talked really about the top four or five guys there just right now. I think you would add Kalepo in there if you really want five, you want another offensive tackle. And like I said, perhaps, you know, Sean Ryan goes to Stanford, or, you know, I need to write his name down. It's Enoch Vemahi, I think, is how you pronounce his name. I kind of almost want to say it different because I only have it in my mind and I can't remember how it's spelled exactly. But, I think those are two guys that you could see, you know, if they really want five and they lose one of those guys, I think that's when a guy like Nate Kalepo kind of pops into the picture a little more. But I think we talked about the plan A right now and sort of where they stand with the plan A of four or five guys in the class.
All right. Thanks, Nick, for that. Let's go. Let's see. We got T. Davey 93. Could you rank 1 through 3 the recruiting and closing abilities of Kiffin, Sark, and Helton? And he said a reporter's favorite question. Can you talk a little bit about the differences in their recruiting philosophy as well as what made them individually great recruiters? Thanks and fight on, T. Davey 93.
That's a really, really good question. That's a very good question.
Recruiting and closing.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think
they're all really good closers. Would you agree? Or, I mean, they all did a good job of that.
I would say Kiffin was more of an average closer than a really good closer. I'd say he's in
that. He did have that implosion year, so that kind of hurts you.
Yeah, I say he's more in the B-minus range. Than Sark. I think Sark is more of an A-. And, you know, Helton is kind of proven to be like a solid A, just in terms of the in-house. That's really the thing. It's the in-home visit and that last chance you get to sit down with the family. And, of course, the other meetings that you have on campus during unofficial visits and official visits. And sort of the impact of that conversation with that head coach and how much things start out and then how they end with that conversation and really the parents and the coaches and everybody around that player's recruitment, what kind of impact the words of that head coach have on them. And I think with Helton, I mean, every kid that I've talked to that is committed to USC and even those who haven't committed to USC, I go back to like Wyatt Davis, who was recruited by USC. And early on in his recruitment, he came into the junior day that they had there. And he just raved about Helton and Helton's demeanor and just, you know, sort of feeling like Helton was a guy that had your back and was really recruiting you because he liked you as a person. And that connection really goes a long ways with a lot of recruits. And I think that's really where Kiffin always came up short. I think he felt a little bit disconnected. I think that there was a hard sort of line there with him being a coach and kids didn't necessarily feel like, I think the father figure sort of thing kind of comes into to play. And obviously he's a younger guy. And I think just the way his mannerisms and the way he talked, he just talks more of like a coach. And I think that was his philosophy. I think he had a little more of the 30,000 foot view rather than the 10 foot view when it came to his team. And while I don't know that he had necessarily the personal touch and that connection with kids in terms of closing ability, I think he was a very good evaluator of talent. I think that was really where his recruiting talent and his recruiting ability shined the most. It was the ability to organize and to see the angles. He never was a guy that bullshitted himself. I would say that about Lane. He knew when they had a shot at a guy and when they felt like they were spinning their wheels on a guy. And of course, everybody will bring up, oh, what about Jalen Ramsey? Whatever. They got played by Jalen Ramsey. They didn't get played by Jalen Ramsey. Look, at they had a 7-6 season and they did implode on the field. And it looked like maybe that whole staff was going to get fired right after that game. And I remember those kids coming in, you know, like a sad train from the rail yard, one by one at the Army All-American Bowl. And we had practice that day. And then the Sun Bowl was on just as those kids were coming in. We were watching like the last quarter of the Sun Bowl in the war room there and the ballroom, the Texas State ballroom there at the hotel at the Hyatt. And those kids are coming by, and the players' lounge is right next to where we work in the war room. And I'm seeing those kids, and they're embarrassed. They're embarrassed that, oh, man, yeah, USC. Because you got all the SEC kids going, you guys lost to Georgia Yek? Georgia Yek with a Y? And it's just a bad look, and that's what happened. You know, so, I mean, he was pretty good at being able to see the angles and kind of knowing the guys that fit with the program. And, yeah, I think he and Ed later on got a little enamored with recruiting guys that they had already recruited. I sort of made jokes about that, and Lane even made jokes about that with Ed. I mean, remember we were watching I can't remember who the player was, but he was basically saying, you know, Ed's looking for another Blindside story so he can be in another movie. And that was very true, because there was guys that, you know, when Ed was recruiting, a lot of times he'd bring up Mac Patterson. He'd bring up Kenichi Odizi. He'd always talk about a guy that he'd already recruited as, oh, this could be the next guy. Hey, Jor, where are we going to get him? He's going to be a five-star. Let me tell you, he's going to be the next Jadeveon Clowney. He's going to be the next Kenichi Odizi. He's going to be Sean Cody. And it was always that guy that you already recruited. It's like, ah, I think he's going to be this next guy. You know, how about this next guy? And sometimes you get enamored with a kid from an evaluation standpoint and you're projecting too much. And I think some of that went on. There's also some times where I think it was more of the statement. And again, this kind of goes back to what I was talking about with Kayvon Thibodeaux. You know, there's the player you're recruiting that is going to contribute A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And then there's this statement of, we're locking down Southern California and a top five-star player, regardless of how good he really is, we're going to get him. Because that's what we do. We're USC. This is Southern California. This is our recruiting territory. And you're not going to come in and take a guy out of there and get that publicity of stealing a guy from USC. That's sort of the statement part of it. And I think with Lane and Ed and that staff, sometimes they go into Florida and they go chase some kid because it was a statement. You know, we're going to offer this kid and go after him because we're USC and we need to be involved with the top players. And it didn't necessarily really matter if they had a really good shot at him. But as I said, I don't think they spun their wheels a lot in those situations. I think Lane was always real with himself. And eventually when it came down to it, he did a pretty good job of knowing, okay, this is how things got to sit up. This is how we have to do things. Now with Sark, I think what I really liked about Sark is, A, I think he put way more emphasis on recruiting the West Coast than Lane, and I think that paid dividends for him. Now, when he went to Washington, he had to do that. When he went to Washington, he had to go find guys. It wasn't you're at USC and you can just float the USC emblem out there and kids are going to scramble and go, oh my gosh, I want to go to USC. He was a part of a non-win team. They were undefeated because they were defeated. They were zero, but the zero was on the wrong side of the win and loss column. they had to build that program up to mediocrity. You know, they weren't mediocre when he got there. They weren't anything when they got there. They had to get to mediocrity. So he had to go find guys. He had to go recruit and really evaluate at a no-star level to be able to get some guys. And they did that. They ended up having some really good players that all got drafted that one year that were a bunch of Sark guys. They weren't Chris Peterson guys. They were Sark guys. And so he developed a staff and he developed a philosophy and a mentality to go out there and find guys. And that was the good thing about him. That's where they started to get guys like Chris Brown. I can't give that total credit to Sarkisian staff, because that was really T and Ed Orgeron there, that little interim period of time where T kind of got the green light to just start offering whoever. And that's when they brought in Uchenna, Nwosu, they brought in Chris Brown, they brought in Najee Harris. I think that was the year when I think Deontay Burnett ended up getting the blue shirt. And Deontay Burnett was probably that blue shirt call was made by Sark, because Sark obviously ended up being the guy that they hired full time to be the coach. But with Sark, when he came in, he definitely had more emphasis on West Coast recruiting and not getting enamored with going to Florida. Let's go into Texas. Let's go into Ohio. Let's go into these places just because we're a national recruiting power and that's what we do. It was, you know what? Let's go into Northern California. Let's go into Washington. Let's go into Hawaii. Let's go into Orange County. Let's go find a guy that we know exists, because look at the NFL. Look at the numbers. California's still producing a bunch of players. There's guys like Josh Allen who end up at friggin' Wyoming. Don't tell me you can't find a quarterback. Don't tell me you can't find a running back. Let's go get guys, because they learned at Washington you had to. You're not going into Florida to get guys when you're in Washington and you haven't won a game. You got to go into California. You got to go find guys in the city section. You got to go find guys that people are overlooking. So that, I think, is what made him a good recruiter. And Sark, when Sark, you know, had his focus, we'll just put it that way as a euphemism. When Sark was focused, he was a great talker and he could sell. And he was articulate and he had a way about him and he related with young people. He had that energy. And I think that made him, in terms of recruiting and sales, because there's always that kind of, you know, two parts of recruiting. There's the evaluation and there's actually the salesmanship. I think he was very good at that. But I have to say, I don't know and don't think at this point he's as good as Helton. I think when it comes to closing, Helton is, man, he's brought the hammer. I mean, he's been a guy in most situations that has come with it. He knows what to say, and he's just connecting, I think, with the families and with those kids on a spiritual level. Obviously, he's very faith-based, and that works with a lot of families, and I think that's a big deal. I think that's part of his philosophy and how he runs the team. And so it's carried over with recruiting. And he still has the Sark sort of mentality in terms of going and finding guys. And we're talking about that right now. We're talking about Stanley Tafu'u. We're talking about Trey Davis. We're talking about guys that don't have a bunch of scholarship offers here. I mean, Trey Davis doesn't have any scholarship offers, quite frankly. You can count Portland State and Sacramento State. But they're going to find guys, and they're still recruiting hard on the West Coast because you've got Johnny Nansen there as a recruiting coordinator. So they're not enamored with just going in the SEC and recruiting kids just because. Like, oh, well, he's in the SEC, and he's got offers from Georgia and LA. Oh, we got an offer him. You know, just because they are doing their homework and getting guys that they like, and they're standing on their own evaluations.
All right. That was a really good question.
And the podcast.
Great answer. No, that was a good answer. Like, there's a really good analysis there. We got Mark in Crown City, which is Pasadena, if you don't know. Ryan and Gerard. Sometimes I look at your name and I'm thinking, are they saying Gerald as a joke? But this was actually just Gerard. So
You're anticipating Gerald.
I anticipate it sometimes now. I'm like looking for them to do it wrong. There seems to be an inordinately large number of out-of-state recruits visiting USC this spring, including some who are quote-unquote hard commits to other top programs. While well-educated by GMART, the commits at this point in the cycle are more like cancelable dinner reservations. Are the numbers visiting a sign the Trojans are reestablishing a national presence not seen since the Carroll, Leinart, Bush, White era, or simply an indication these young men want to test the waters for affirmation of the demand for their talents? Given USC's historic limited success in attracting commitments from recruits outside the region, should we be encouraged? Fight on, Mark in Crown City.
Now, you said Crown City was Pasadena. I thought that was Rose City.
I'm pretty sure it's – yeah, I think it's –
Crown City. I've never heard that.
I'll Google it now. I'm pretty sure I just talked about that. like another podcast.
In the podcast of champions. Well, to answer the question, yes and no. I think you're seeing a lot of kids taking unofficial visits these days to a lot of schools. It's different, and I don't really know why it's so different, because it's still expensive to fly. It's probably even more expensive to fly. I think what you're seeing is some loopholes being used with handlers and trainers and coaches. I think that's sort of one of the things that you're seeing a lot with these unofficial visits, because you've seen a bunch of California kids going to the SEC, which they've never visited the SEC before. They go into Florida. They're visiting Florida State. They're visiting Alabama. I mean, those are expensive trips to just get up and, you know, start flying all over the country. You got kids from Hawaii, like Tua Telly, who are going to Alabama and they're going to Florida. I mean, that's a long, long ways away to be going all the way to the South and then going up to the Midwest and then coming back to the West. So I think just in general, I think there's some loopholes being used. Remember, the NCAA actually stopped coaches from being able to be paid when they went to coach college camps. They were getting stipends for that, and those stipends were usually going towards those coaches bringing in their own players. So they would be able to kind of pay for the players and the coaches to be able to travel to those schools for those camps and unofficial visits. And so that was cut out by the NCAA. But I think there's some other things that have gone on that I have to imagine. And I don't know. It's really, quite frankly, it's just none of my business to get into that. I'm not trying to, you know, write any Yahoo stories about schools, whatever they're doing to get kids on campus. But I tell you, there's a lot more kids getting on campus for unofficial visits than there have been in the past, just in general. I don't think it's USC. I think it's everybody. I mean, Oregon had like 150 recruits or something at their spring game. They're all flying up there. There ain't nobody there from Eugene, Oregon. There's not a lot of blue chip guys from Eugene, Oregon. So they're basically all kids coming from out of state. And more than half of them are probably from Southern California. Now, is it just that, you know, trips up there to Portland are so much cheaper? Not really. I think it's just a matter of working the system, and you start to see kids take a bunch of visits, and I think everybody's doing it. You're seeing them take visits all over the country. I think it's sort of par for the course right now, and you're going to continue to see that. Now, you're also going to see official visits, so keep in mind that some of these visits that are happening, and they're really fewer and far between, but a guy like Chris Steele, St. John Bosco, defensive back, five-star, looking at USC, probably right now I think we have him pegged for USC. He's going to end up committing. I think his new commitment date is going to be June 7th, I believe. He bumped it up from September. We'll see if it sticks. But he's a guy that's actually taken some official visits this offseason. So he's gone to Oklahoma officially. He went to LSU officially. I think he's got a couple other schools in the mix for official visits. Oregon's probably a school that's in the mix for an official visit. USC, probably not going to get an official visit until the end. But that's a kid that's taking some official visits. And you can take official visits now, basically from mid-April into that last week of June. So that's going to also get mixed in with some of these unofficial visits that you've seen.
That was basically our last question. We had another one from Bearsecutor, but it was kind of a repeat of the offensive line stuff he had asked about earlier. Just so you know about Pasadena, it turned 125 in 2012. So I guess it's 130, 31 years old now. The name, so it derived from the Chippewa word of the valley. So I guess the local Indians would grow oranges in that area near Colorado and Fair Oaks Boulevards. But anyway, of the valley, and the town's nickname was Crown of the Valley. So I assume that's where Crown City came from. So I did a little research for you, Gerard.
There you go.
It is Crown City. Pasadena is Crown City.
Knowing is half the battle, right? Isn't that what G.I. Joe used to say?
Was it G.I. Joe, or was it like those? Yeah, probably. Or those ones like the Schoolhouse Rock stuff? Was that one of them?
I don't know.
Did you ever watch the Schoolhouse Rocks? Those were good. I think the guy that used to write those or wrote the music just died recently. You know, like he wrote those songs like I'm Just a Bill and all those things. Like those are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think he passed away recently. So don't at me if I'm wrong. But
I
believe
that. Oh, there you go. Rip. Don't know his name, but he's just that guy that wrote those songs on that one show that you think you watched. But
we would watch Saturday morning cartoons for like a thing. And I think these were like in between commercials and stuff. They would show that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're like PSAs.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Anything else you want to talk about? Since that's all our questions, we done here. I got stuff to do.
That's not for me to answer. That's for the Trojan fans to answer. If I've answered all their questions, then I think we're done. I don't have anything just to generally spill out there. Off the top of my head, no. Stay tuned to USCFootball.com. Should be some news breaking pretty soon. Never want to necessarily have people just refreshing on their computers because we are dealing with 17-year-old kids. But should be some news breaking here soon. I think there could be actually, going back to the question of, should USC be pushing harder, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they could end up with having, 8-10 commits maybe by the time you get to the regular season. There's a lot of time still left here for some things to happen. So, I mean, you got guys like Drake Davis, defensive lineman from Corona Centennial, 6'4", 260. I know he likes USC a lot. Jude Wolf is going to be committing in August. I think August 3rd. Just put in a crystal ball for him. I think USC is his leader right now. I think he's a top priority for USC, and they need at least one tight end, probably two tight ends in the 2019 class. Talked about Chris Steele, July 7th. So you've got a handful of guys here that are top targets that are going to be making their decisions, and USC is going to be in the top two or three for all those guys. So, I'm sitting here talking about, I don't think USC is really going to change the game too much, but I mean, they could end up with 10 commits before the season starts, and then they're basically on par for where they are in most years. Although I would say that this class would be certainly compared to last class, if we're just, outlining the class and we're saying those guys are commits and those guys end up calling it for USC, that's more of the class that is a preview of what they're going to want come signing day. I don't think those are guys that you start to look at and go, I mean, obviously people will question a guy like maybe Trey Davis if he's committing because he doesn't have any other offers. But everything I hear, I'm hearing USC really like what they saw from him. And they offered him and are going all on him, and it doesn't really matter what other offers he has. Certainly guys like Jude Wolf and Chris Steele, the likes of those players, those are top targets for USC right now. And if you want to check out the top targets, always go to the targets list, which is there on the recruiting menu when you get that pull down. I had somebody else ask about the target list that we produce, which is something entirely different. That's actually a PDF file. You go to the ... or you go to the more option on the pull down menus. So that's when you want to find those, that's where you can get them. Again, coming here in the near future, we're discussing different ways of being able to format the content that we're putting up for you guys so you can get it and kind of go to it and get it, I guess, just easier than it flowing through the peristyle, which is, you're putting up 5-6 stories a day in the peristyle, and sometimes people, they miss stuff.
One bummer, not bummer, there's certain kids you follow and we'll film, and I'll be like, oh, man, I really like this kid. You hope you get to cover him in college. Braden Liebruch was one. The tight end from Arizona that ended up committing to Texas this past week. So he's one I liked a lot.
Well, I'll tell you what, there might be some more heartbreak because Jake Smith, the wide receiver from the Scottsdale area, is going to be also committing. And right now it sounds like Texas might get two receivers / sort of athletes out of that area. It sounds like Texas is doing a number in Arizona, and he's got Texas and USC as his top two. And from what I've been hearing, sounds like maybe Texas might be getting another commitment there. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. I can't remember what his commitment date was. I don't know if he's actually got a solid date yet, but we know that Texas and USC are his final two, and he's going to be making a decision. He should be officially visiting USC, actually, I think, later this month. So that may change. But right now, it sounds like Texas got Liebruch, and Texas is making a move to get Jake Smith as well.
All right. Well, it used to be Texas A&M going into Arizona and getting some of the best players. Now, apparently, Texas is doing that, so we'll see. But he was a stud. I liked watching him and put up some cool highlights of him. So. But like Gerard said, USC needs to get a couple of those guys. We'll see who they end up landing. We'll see. Maybe the modern day kid. We'll see what goes on there. But Gerard, great stuff. Thanks again for coming on. It's about an hour. Not too bad. and we got you out of here and move you on your way. We'll see. We got to wrap up the trial coverage, like all that's still going on, and lots going on at USCFootball.com right now.
Yeah, plenty going on. So stay tuned, and we're gonna get. I mean, we're just. It feels like we're just getting started because we got camp season that's gonna hit here in really a couple weeks. Then we're gonna have what the summer workouts will start. We're not allowed to actually cover those, I think, in June.
Well, we don't know the rules yet. We'll see, but we don't know the.
Yeah, the freshmen are going to be, that first wave of freshmen are going to be on campus June 8th, looks like. And so I've been talking to some of those guys, Elijah Winston, Devin Williams. Check out, you know, all those stories, going in depth with those guys as they're preparing. Really, the last couple of weeks of high school, a couple of them have finals still, but they all look good. I mean, it looks like the 2018 class should be all qualifying and all academic taken care of, basically. So that's kind of a big deal, and we'll see them on campus here pretty soon. Whether we'll be able to cover it in early June or have to wait till late June and July, we'll definitely get you video and photos and all the analysis from those workouts.
All right. Sounds great. That's Jerome Martinez. Follow me on Twitter at GMartLive. You can follow me on Twitter at InsideTroy. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We'll see you on the Peristyle, and we'll talk to you next time.